We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I want to thank you for coming this afternoon. I felt that, as I can see, I've done this work for over 30 years, and I could see that we were starting to conflate some issues, not unexpectedly, but we needed to have clarity on this important decisions that have been made in recent days, and some news has come in recent days. So, let me begin by saying that, you know, the mindset that I take to this work is perhaps a little different than other organizations and other places. My mindset is on taking us to best in class and on a relentless focus on improving the Buffalo public schools, because we know that we can't have a city of choice if we don't have a school system of excellence. Now, what I've seen starting to happen since I brought the news of a recommendation of raises for my top exempt staff, in other words, the leadership team for the whole district, was that the information was beginning to get conflated with this recent news from the state around a minimal increase in state scores. And so how are these increases happening to top executive staff while we just had a minimal increase in basically flat for our 3-8 scores? And I felt that certainly was not a fair picture to paint for the taxpaying public. So let me clarify in five major points what is going on here and why it is important for me at this time to have brought salary increases to the board and recommended for this top performing executive team that I have. 33 exempt employees, 18 who sit on this cabinet and I meet with weekly, and then one-on-one weekly as well. So that's two meetings per week that I have with my top people. This is a four-year picture, colleagues. I've been here 4 years now, and the salary increase was to account for the 4 years that we've been here. I don't know when another one will come for these employees. It's not a yearly thing. It's not a one-year thing. The notion that it was a one-year 5% increase, while accurate, is not for a 1 year. It's a picture for 4 years, and that's what I was trying to make up for. And that then accounts to or amounts to 1.9% over 4 years for this employee group. Rochester, for example, we've done considerable research on this for the Big Five. You look at New York City right now, it's fairly egregious in my mind, but that's another story. It's New York City. Rochester and the Big Five, for example, have a built-in contractual amount every year for their exempt employees. Buffalo does not. It's year-to-year and it's superintendent-based. And the last time I made a recommendation was in 2017, December, and it was followed up for a 2.5 COLA increase, and the board agreed to execute that recommendation in January of 2018 and July of 2018 at 1% and 1.5%. And over the past 4 years, that's the only raise that this group has received. It's 3% per year in Rochester, automatic, and other discretion beyond that, but that's in the contract for those employees. That's not the case here in Buffalo. The other thing is to be competitive in this first part. I want to make the first point. We have to attract good talent, keep good talent. I have great talent, pound for pound in Buffalo, and I've been in much bigger districts, but this is my finest executive team. It's my finest overall executive team. We've been together 4 years. They're doing extraordinary work on the academic side, and they're doing really, really excellent work on the business side. And I'm going to go into just a little detail on that following. Now, when I first arrived here 4 years ago, colleagues, you had 10 major fault lines here in this city, school system. 10. 4 major academic fault lines and 6 business legal cost fault lines. The 4 academic fault lines were that this district was literally in a state of takeover. The state was going to take over the district if we didn't start turning around and make progress with this district. Commissioner Ilya said as much. She was as clear as day to the school board, and she was as clear to me when she was recruiting me to come here. And I asked her, what is your toughest district in the whole state? And she said, Buffalo. So we came here with 4 academic fault lines and 10 major business fault lines. So risk of state takeover by the risk of district takeover by the state, number one, half the district was in receivership, 25 schools, single-digit scores 5 years ago. We were in the single digits for ELA and math, grades 3 through 8. And the grad rate 5 years ago, not when I came, but 5 years ago, was at 48%. In the business arena, I came into a district that was in a persistent, long-term structural deficit. We had major labor contracts that had been unresolved for over 16 years. The BTF Teachers Union and the BCSA Administrative Union had not had a contractual agreement, labor agreement, in over 16 years. You know about that. We had no district financial plan. We were year to year, hoping to get it approved, hoping we could jerry-rig a budget and get it through without major continuing deficit through the year. We had insurance costs that were out of control. The employees had a Cadillac. No, what's bigger than that? I have a Cadillac. I think Bentley. Bentley is, I think, even better than that. They had a Bentley health insurance for both actives and retirees. Not to chagrin that, but that's what was going on. And guess what? We couldn't afford it. And the cost was just spiraling, as in many organizations, if you don't do something about it. Significantly, a long-term financial liability that many organizations, private sector, public sector, wherever, don't really address, they kick it down the road, is what's called an OPEB liability. That was $2.9 billion when I came, and soaring. Every year was going to keep going up. Huge reliance on outside legal counsel. We had a lawyer, we had a chief legal counsel, but the board chose to hire yet another legal counsel from this, what is it, Hodgson and Russ organization. So every month we were way out of control with our legal costs. Monthly, I couldn't believe it. Over $200,000 a month sometimes we were paying on legal costs. And the amounts paid in judgments and claims, people suing us and winning, was at an extraordinary amount. And I've come from Miami-Dade County Public Schools, which is an $8.7 billion organization, and Memphis City Schools, which was a $2.4 billion organization. And I have not seen those kind of costs, even for those size districts. So those were the 6 business fault lines and the 4 academic fault lines. And then one other one, which was why I never really even thought about coming to Buffalo, was that the school board was dysfunctional. And you're in the national funny papers almost on a regular basis. It was split down the middle by race, 5-4. Board members were at each other all the time. And staff were at the mercy of whatever new dysfunction was going to occur at the moment. Those were the 5 things that I came into when I came here 5 years ago. So then What did I have to do? First charge is to, we got to get a team and we got to get a plan. And I went to work on recruiting, interviewing, searching, reviewing as many folks as I could to bring on to what I knew needed to be done, the work that needed to be done to address these 10 fault lines. We've got that team. The team that has remained with me for 4 years is the best team that I've ever had. And I've made changes along the way from that original team. And that team then had to do what? They had to execute against these fault lines, and they had to do what I needed them to do to carry out what's called the new education bargain. The new education bargain, colleagues, was brought into existence to address those 10 fault lines. So let's see where we are today. So today we have a new education bargain, and you can read about it. I won't go through it because it's an elegant, concise piece. But the bottom line is, you know what it is: the rigorous attention to early elementary education, the reduced class sizes, the 21 strong community schools that are engaging parents and families in ways never seen before, the 10 new innovative high school programs, which we're betting on to help really push and elevate their graduation rate when they finally graduate their first class in 2020, way over that current mark and into the 70s graduation rate. Extended learning excellence for all after-school programs in every school. We had none. We have 60 now. Every day, 5 days a week. Services for our neediest children and families are extraordinary. Buffalo gets an A+. In that regard. And then our new relationship with our teachers. We solved and resolved a 16-year standing contract with the teachers and with the administrators. The achievements are that we now have 3 receivership schools, down from 25. We now have 46 schools in good standing out of 60. We had 14 schools in good standing when I came on board 4 years ago. We have grad rates for half of our high schools that are above 80%. Those half are flourishing and are doing very, very well. I have some right in the 60s and 70s, 3, and then I have just a handful now that I'm focusing on, but they are low-performing high schools as far as graduation rate, in the 30s. 40s, and low 50s. I have 4 or 5 of those schools. But meanwhile, I have 4 of these innovative new high schools getting ready to graduate their first class next year this time. And our first one already graduated their class, Emerson 2. They were our first innovative new high school to now, and they're going to be occupying the new building downtown in January of 2020. Their graduation rate was 85.6 for their first class. That's really exciting and encouraging. And yes, I was not happy about yesterday's state assessment scores for our grades 3 through 8. Well, I fully expected a 7% increase in ELA and a 5% increase in math. And we have been working on our instructional priorities and on our focus like never before with all of our staff, teachers, administrators, teachers' assistants, this team, working, coaching and teaching and developing our novice principals. There's 2/3 of our principals and teachers are novice. They're going to make mistakes. But what happens, colleagues, in this state, which is different than where I've been before, is that we make what we call false positive errors a lot because we don't have formative assessments that are aligned to the state test. The state test is what's called a high-stakes test. It's, everybody's got to take it, everybody, and it's more normative than it is criterion-based. We need 2 formative tests so that we can give in October and in February for our students, maybe December and February, so that we know exactly where they are, and done by another company, the same company that does the high stakes. Because what we do our own district-based assessments, and we try to align them, and we use prior year items, and we do our best to give kids a test environment that simulates the high stakes. But you know what we've been doing? We've been overestimating how well they're doing because they do well on those DBAs. So when I ask, how are we doing? What's the deal? Every month I ask our principals and our coaches and our team, and they say, we're looking good on the first DBA or on the first writing prompt and so forth. Still have to make improvements here, there, and then we go forward. But then when the test comes in, often 4 and 5 grade levels, colleagues, than grade level, we overestimate the results and we get a lower score. So we have to fix that going forward, just all across the state. Because what should we really be shooting for? I want to be able to confidently shoot for a doable target every year and get us to 85% proficient. Anything shorter than that, you're just being a higher F, you know, F plus versus an F. The state overall is an F. 40% proficient is not anything to shoot for. But that's where we are as a whole state. So to me, it's time as a whole state to start unpacking, you know, what is in the test, what do we want our children to be able to know and do by grade, and let's move forward on that discussion. Because I don't see the state reaching 85% or 90% anytime soon. And Buffalo certainly won't reach it anytime soon at this rate and at this level of lack of reconciliation on why is it what it is. And that's to no fault of my team and their performance. In the business side of the house, colleagues, we are in better financial condition than we have been in recent memory. It's astounding because you've heard it, and you've heard it more than is actual, that we were a failing financial district full of deficit and mismanagement and the like. That's not the case. We have settled and resolved 7 out of our 10 major contracts. 7 out of 10. When I came on board 4 years ago, we hadn't settled any. And we had a structural deficit. So how does that look going forward? We reversed that. Almost solved all of them. About to begin negotiations with the teachers union for this next round. And we have a fund balance or a surplus of over $200 million. We have a higher fund balance surplus today than we had before we settled the last teacher's contract. You can't do that without outstanding, extraordinary management of the fiscal dollars of the school district. And my executive team is largely responsible for doing that. We've begun to control health insurance costs now. We are beating the market with health insurance costs, saving over $12 million a year. In a previous health insurance plan that had cosmetic surgery, that was way out of control with retirees and actives paying nothing into it. Actives didn't pay, retirees didn't pay, and we could not afford it. We were in a structural deficit and still doing that. We resolved that in these 7 contracts that we've since worked on. We're going to resolve it going further as we go forward, continue to resolve it. And when you do that with health insurance savings, you drive down the OPEB liability significantly for years to come. It's legacy. Long after I'm gone, that OPEB liability will come down for the future. And then finally, colleagues, I will say that our legal costs and the amount that we pay on judgments and claims is way, way, way down. We have a crackerjack legal team now. I'll put it first in class against anybody in the region. And we have a crackerjack financial team. I'll put it against anyone's financial team in the region, public, private, whoever, wherever, county, city, whatever. That's what we've done. And that's why I wanted my executive team to get the increases, modest increases, relative to, do the homework, whether it's Williamsville or whether it's New York City, Rochester or Amherst, this is a modest increase over 4 years of 1.9% overall. And some got performance bonuses because of the extraordinary work they've done to help me attack these 10 fault lines. So, colleagues, in short, extraordinary work, talented, dedicated people, and the board is functioning better than it ever has been, and they're focused singularly on access, equity, opportunity, and quality. All the board members. It's calm. You're not there anymore. And we're going to be like that going forward. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your attention. Open to any questions you might have.
Now, you are still in, you don't have contracts with all the...
Three more.
Right, that's right. There is one that... vice principals and administrative staff.
We did that. Yeah, that's one of them that's done. It's called BCSA, and they were done right around the time the teachers were done, back in 2016. And they had also been outstanding for about 16 years.
I got the impression that the vice principals...
Principals and vice principals,
they're done.
Dr. Cash, you just went through a lot of the successes over the past 4 years, while also noting you have some challenges going forward. One of the board members during the meeting on Wednesday asked if this money could be better spent addressing the educational challenges still to come. How do you answer that question? Could the money be better spent?
No, absolutely not. The money is modest. The money is modest. It's $184,000, $185,000 to reward the top people in your organization. If we were wasting money, if people were not performing at a high level, and if there was all kind of other issues around cronyism and nepotism and all of that, the top executives as you see in organizations across the state and across the country, then you absolutely would say yes to that. But I say no to it because it's a modest cost for our top people, which you cannot get the achievements and accomplishments that we've gotten over these last 4 years. Over 150 major, major district accomplishments and achievements across seven major areas of our work without this investment. It's an investment to keep these good people here. And the other costs, for example, does it compete with classrooms? Does it compete with the aides or the assistants or special education or E&L supports? No, we have robust support in place for our students. And that's why I was confident and clear that we needed to do this at this time. Because I don't know when it'll happen again.
You only had one no vote among the board members, and that vote followed an executive session. I wasn't there, and to your point, you're right, we're not at all the board meetings like we used to because there's not kind of the chaos that existed for so long, right? We should have been there. I apologize if we weren't. But it was a long meeting. They went into executive session, came out, you got the vote 8-1. So clearly there was broad support for this from the board. What was your pitch to the board members beyond what you just said to us? Do you feel like they understand the successes and the need to do this?
Yeah, I can't speak what occurred in executive session, but I can allude to the public printed item, board item, I think it was 13A, that gave a concise one-page, one-and-a-half-page rationale for the increases. And that's what I think. When folks read that carefully, I think they understood where I was coming from. Just like with this pitch, what we're talking about now, and I've talked to you about it, that's what the board understands is the reason for this. This is not to be conflated with graduation rate or with test scores or anything like that. That is inappropriate and unfair. You can talk about achievement over time, and you can talk about what is expected and hold me accountable, but hold me accountable to that, not staff members for that. That's not the board's role. The board holds the superintendent accountable to specific goals that the board sets. And one of the points I was making was that the board hadn't set any of those goals. And every year, I encourage them to do so, and hopefully with the new board members coming on, the expectation is that they will start to do this. And then if I don't meet those, then give me the responsibility or the accountability. If I do well and meet them or exceed them, then that becomes part of my evaluation. If I don't, then that becomes part of the sanction or the whatever you want to do. Take the next boat, take the next bus. See? But then it's my job to figure out who and how we accomplish the goals. That's my job. It's not the board's job. And these folk that I've hired, and this is just a sampling of them, they are executing everything that I've asked them to do and work with them and coach them to do over these last 4 years. But this work is hard. This work is never over. And we still have absolutely more work to do on the major metrics of a school system. But there's so much more going on underneath those metrics and to build those metrics that you'll probably see the full results of this work long after I'm gone. You'll see the graduation rate well over 70-75%. You'll see no more failing schools. You'll see increases in proficiency, but more importantly, you'll see increases in growth. Because as long as we have these state assessments, it's going to be very difficult for folks to hit with the kind of challenges our school system has and the complexity of it to hit 85-90% proficiency and so forth. But we are relentless and intent on that kind of a mindset. It's all about mindset. And we're starting to see a change in our teachers. We're seeing a change in our administrators. And certainly my leaders with me are responsible for making sure that this is a high reliable, high achieving school system. We're not there yet, but we're on our way.
Just to be clear, you were thinking about it as an adjustment for 4 years.
Yes.
But those raises won't be paid over 4 years.
No. Oh. No. This is right now, one time. And as I know at this level, we always are checking that politically with the school board because that's an issue in every district I've ever been in. When you start getting over 100,000, 150,000, folks want to, you know, that's an alert, and you want to be able to justify that. And I wholeheartedly agree with that, and I feel I have in what I've just addressed to you, the fault lines that were here and where we are now with those, and the work continues. Any other questions? Those are good ones. Thank you.
Yes, I have a question about the statewide numbers for New York State DLA and MATS just came out yesterday. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, what can we do specifically here in Buffalo to try to see a marked improvement?
Well, we have a full plan underway with that. Again, it's called the Education Bargain. But in instruction specifically, we have had four major instructional priorities for ELA and for math across the district. And we're going to continue the professional development that goes along with that and the technology supports. Our technology in many ways is best in class. We're going to have Nearpod coming to us. We already have ZSpace and other technology where right away we can know what students' responses are rather than just a hand go up. We can do a whole class response and the teacher knows who got it and who didn't. It's really important new technology that we'll be using to grow more rapidly those math skills and those literacy skills. And then if you look at that handout that I don't call it a handout, but the press release that Ms. Calla put together yesterday, front and back, we talked about those four instructional priorities and what we are doing. So that will continue. Every day students reading, every day students writing independently, every day students showing their thinking on their math problems, every day grade level assignments, not the low grade level assignments. See, you have to believe that these children can achieve rather than say, well, my kids aren't quite there yet. So we have to make sure that they're at the level that the tests are going to be tested on. And then high expectations. And then academic rigor across the board. May not get it all in one day, but the rigor has to be infused into these, into the daily instruction. We started that 2 years ago. It takes time, and it's getting there, and we can see the results of that. But these scores, if you look deeply into it, it's a lot of them did go up, but some fell off precipitously and is not explaining to me because among the better schools as far as test scores. It was interesting to see that. And then some of our other schools, many of them, also were high performing over time, sort of stayed right at that 0 and 1%. So that's what keeps you flat. So got to keep working at it. We have a plan now, and we're working the plan.
Good.
Okay.
Tom Buckin, you still there?
Thank you, sir.
Tom, I'm here.
Any questions?
I think I'm all set.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thanks, Colleague. Elena.
On another day, that MEC deal is a big deal.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.